and welcome to Beanball Podcast, episode number 4. I am your host, as always, Jason Wojciechowski, coming to you from Beanball Studios in Los Angeles. It is the wee hours between June 12th and June 13th, and the A's are coming off of a win, a relatively rare occurrence these days, an 8-5 win, which is an even more rare occurrence. 13 runs scored in an A's game is not your typical outcome, particularly in a win. Eight runs for the offense. Now, this is against a bad team. It's against Jeremy Guthrie, who was not a great pitcher even in Baltimore, much less moving to Colorado, which, as I sort of joked earlier today, Jeremy Guthrie is, in a piece I was writing for Baseball Perspectives, Jeremy Guthrie, it turns out, is not a good fit for the Rockies because the Rockies are a Major League Baseball team. But anyway, the A's did hit against Jeremy Guthrie. They hit a number of home runs. Brandon Moss hit two home runs, one of them up into the third deck in right field, one into the second deck. That was pretty enormous. Brandon Inge, it was all Brandon's day. Brandon Inge launched a sort of line drive home run into left field. Cliff Pennington actually hit a home run, and Cliff Pennington was actually robbed of a home run by Brody Colvin or Tyler Colvin, I don't remember his first name, but Colvin playing center field for the Rockies. So there's a Brody Colvin out there somewhere and a Tyler Colvin out there somewhere, and I don't know which one this was, but he made a great sort of leaping catch in center field, timed it really well, didn't get run into the wall. It wasn't as impressive maybe as the Seth Smith home run robbery in Arizona over the weekend, but it was still a nice robbery, taking away a run from a homer from Cliff Pennington. Speaking of Smith, Seth Smith himself hit a couple of line drive doubles, and even the out he made in the fifth inning was just a hard line drive to right field. So, you could say, oh, he's coming back to Colorado, but he's been hitting. He's been hitting all year. He hasn't always had the results, but it seems like he's just been hitting hard line drives and hard fly balls all year, and it feels like it's just been a matter of time before the approach and the putting the barrel of the bat on the ball started to pay off, and hopefully this is happening now. Hopefully it is starting to pay off. Brandon Inge, a little more defense from Brandon Inge as well in the game. Bartolo Colon ended up allowing a number of runs. As I said, it's 8-5, so it's not a stellar pitching and defense performance, but Brandon Inge had a notable play with runners on second and third, and the A's up, I think, 7-5 at that point. A hard ground ball down the third base line, or down the what would have been down the left field line had he not made a diving catch, and a strong throw over to first to get the out, and allowed the A's to get out of that inning with the lead rather than in a tie game, or even worse, if the Rockies had continued a rally, and allowed them to end up pulling off the victory. So that was nice. In the ninth inning, he had a play going to his left on a sort of chopper, after a slider, an okay slider, I guess, by Ryan Cook. It resulted in a chopper. It resulted in a ground ball, so that's not so bad. Although it was up a little more in the strike zone than Ryan Cook likes to be with his slider. But Inge went to his left and kind of tried to go to his knees and go into a slide and maybe come up and make a throw to second and start a double play. There was a runner on first at the time. Instead, the ball just sort of gets under his glove and into left field. And I don't know what the official scorer ruled it. I would have a hard time giving an error on the play. Not that I necessarily believe in the distinction between errors and hits. It's silly. Inge didn't make the play, and that's unfortunate. But Cook ended up getting out of it, actually. Ryan Cook did pitch the ninth inning of this game. Grant Balfour pitched both the seventh and the eighth. Fuentes did not pitch at all, so that left Ryan Cook pitching the ninth for his first major league save. Now, the problem here is that Cook was all over the place. He actually got a swinging strike on Carlos Gonzalez when Kurt Suzuki set up outside on Gonzalez, and the pitch went up and in, and Gonzalez swung right through it, fortunately, but Suzuki ends up having to lunge back like a soccer goalie, lunging back to make a glove save, essentially, on this ball, and keep it, from going into the backstop and letting the runners move up. So Cook, you know, I'm not real confident, frankly, that Ryan Cook ever knows where his pitchers are going, that he can keep doing this consistently, what he's doing, which is not allowing runs, when he can't seem to really locate his fastball. And the slider, sometimes it's up, sometimes it's always got a lot of movement, so it's always hard to put the barrel on the ball. But at some point, aren't hitters going to start taking these pitches? Don't they learn that as enticing as the pitch looks, they just can't swing at it? So this could end up hurting, and this is why I hope that Bob Melvin is serious when he talks about playing matchups with Ball 4 and Cook and Fuentes, and that this is not just code. I feel like you see this a lot. You see a manager say, we're going to play matchups. And what that means is that for two games, they quote-unquote play matchups. The lefty actually faces lefties, and the righty faces righties. But then there's a guy who pitches two games in the ninth inning in a row, and so, you know, within 3 days of saying we're going to play matchups, he's got a closer, and then, you know, he names a closer. And this whole playing matchups has gone out the window, which is always too bad, because playing matchups is... should be the way that you would think a reasonable bullpen would be run. You would find the best, the situations that the pitchers are going to be most successful in, and you put them in those situations. And there's maybe something to be said for psychology about pitchers knowing when they're going to come in, but if you prepare your pitchers to come in a slightly broader set of situations, you tell your best reliever, you know, you're not going to bring him in the fourth inning. That's still not going to be the situation. He's probably going to be in the seventh or later. Is there really a big difference between saying you might come in the seventh with runners on, or the eighth with runners on, or you might come in the ninth? Is that different from saying you're going to start the ninth, and that's how you use him, and that's what he mentally prepares for? I'm not so sure. I mean, maybe there are guys who are better suited to be closers, classical closers, where they start a clean ninth because they're better when they start with no runners on base than when they have to get out of a jam. But in that case, you're using the lesser pitcher, because the pitcher who can get out of the jam, who can handle that with his stuff or his psychology or whatever it is, that's the pitcher who is the more valuable pitcher of the two. But that doesn't seem to be how anybody operates in building their bullpens. And this is a rant. It's not even a rant, but this is a discussion you've heard before. And, you know, maybe someday it'll change. Maybe someday it won't. You know, maybe you're just in this cycle of baseball men who believe in the roles of their players and things like that. And it's just not going to change, because maybe it just doesn't matter that much. You know, the leads are still held at a great, great degree. You know, you see in the playoffs, under the sort of magnifying glass of the playoff, where suboptimal bullpen usage gets people in trouble. But, you know, you have to get to the playoffs. And for the most part, that's talent that's going to get you there. And for the most part, it's the players that got you into the situation where the manager had to make a bad decision anyway. And so maybe this just doesn't matter, and we're, you know, it's not a mountain out of a molehill situation, but it's just something that we shouldn't bother focusing on. Maybe not. So that went on a little longer than I meant to. I was thinking about talking about Brandon McCarthy, but we will leave that perhaps for a blog post rather than on the podcast. So this has been episode 4 of the Beanball Podcast. I am Jason Wojciechowski. Please email me, jasonw@beanball.org. Twitter, I'm at JLWoj. Facebook.com/beanball. Subscribe to the feed, and we will see you next time.